Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is Full Spectrum CBD? Full Spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than Full Spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, Full Spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's AncientLifeOil.com.
All righty. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It is the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 14th of September, 2021. Tuesday. Happy Tuesday to you. I'm Derek Hunter. I'm your host. Thank you for downloading, sharing, all that good stuff. Appreciate everything you guys do. The show only exists because you guys listen to it. As crazy as that sounds, and as crazy as it is that you guys listen to me, I appreciate the hell out of it. You can email me, DerekAllenHunter@gmail.com. Don't forget about the Curse Program at patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast, the Week in Effin' Review, without any editing or anything like that. It's politically incorrect and nasty, the way politics should be, quite frankly. And also, don't forget to go to AncientLifeOil.com for all of your CBD oil needs. Actually, I have two bottles of it right here. One is almost empty. That is the 500 milligram natural flavor. And then I've got the cinnamon flavor ready to go right there. I just clanged them together. Go to AncientLifeOil.com. Check out all the stuff they have there. It's great stuff. Throw it in there. Check out their sales. They're always having great sales. And then at checkout, enter promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at checkout. Click apply. You get free fast shipping on top of everything else. You can't lose. You can't lose. You can only win. That's the beauty of AncientLifeOil.com. Your home for 100% pure organic CBD oil. Don't forget, promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at checkout. Click apply for free fast shipping. Now, on with the show. I want to start off today with what's going on out in California. Those of you out in our nation's largest state, if you're voting, you might have a problem with voting. You got a big recall election. It is Tuesday. And whether or not you want to keep Gavin Newsom, Governor Hairdo, or whether or not you want to replace him with pretty much anybody else, it looks like if he is to be replaced, although that seems unlikely, but if he were to be replaced, it would be by Larry Elder, who I suspect, you know, he's been attacked. He's called the black face of white supremacy by the Los Angeles Times. You know, it's amazing what you can get away with when you're a leftist. You can literally be a Klansman and be elected to leadership in the Senate twice. Twice elected Senate Majority Leader Bob Byrd was. But no big deal. Nobody cared about it. Barack Obama, Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, they all eulogized him as some sort of great, wonderful man who died. He was the Grand Kleagle of the KKK in West Virginia. Okay. All right. Let you know who they are. I mean, I guess you can't really have a history of the Democratic Party without racism, without the Klan being there. It was their enforcement wing. They've wised up since then. They realized that they can't be as overt, so they're more covert now. But nothing has changed. That's who these people are. But the vote out in California is, it's kind of funny watching Democrats, rich white Democrats, complain and talk about the fear that they have that a black man might get elected their next governor. It's kind of like here in Maryland, where all the Democrats are like, oh, we're super duper progressive, totally progressive. And then you put a black man on the ballot statewide to be governor, and the Democrats go, oof, no. We're not that progressive. They had two options, two opportunities, back to back, and they elected a Republican. That means enough Democrats in this state, because it's a very dominant state for Democrats. Enough Democrats said either I'm not going to vote, or I am going to vote for the white Republican. Because that's who a lot of Democrats really are deep down. But don't worry. Don't worry, Democrats. We know what you're up to. But it happens all over the place. give Democrats an opportunity to put their money where their mouth is, celebrate diversity and all that, and they won't do it. They don't do it. So the Democrats out in California are very, very upset, very concerned that a black man might be their next governor, and worse, a conservative black man. Yuck. Yuck. Conservative black man, those are like the worst. Am I right? Am I right? Of course I'm right. Well, now you talk about voting irregularities. In addition to the fact that the racists out there don't want you to vote for a black man, the voting irregularities out there. The KTLA out there, Los Angeles, it's an ABC affiliate, I believe. Maybe it's a Fox affiliate. They have a story. It's very interesting. They interviewed a whole bunch of people who went to vote in the recall, because you can vote early, because we're a nation that has gone soft and now needs a month to vote or a couple of weeks to vote. Couldn't possibly vote on the same day like we used to. And they were told they'd already voted. Now, how do you rectify that? Well, in California, what they did was mail everybody a ballot. Doesn't matter. It didn't even matter if you live in California. There are people in Virginia who used to live in California who have gotten California ballots for the recall election to their new address. It wasn't like they set the forwarding thing up and the ballots just go, oh, all right, well, we'll just push ahead all the sales circular and all the things for like a Ralph's and all the things that don't exist out here that are out there. We'll just throw it all and forward it. No. These were California mail-in absentee ballots addressed to someone who lived in Virginia. Someone who lived in Virginia. That's a pretty good indication that you no longer live in a state and you should not be voting in that state. But when you're run by Democrats and Democrats want to be able to cheat, that's what you get. Well, they mailed ballots to everybody, every registered voter, like I said. And weirdly, they did something that happens all the time. It's kind of, it'd be nice if this got some more attention, but it won't. I'll give it some attention now. As somebody who worked for a United States senator who represented a state with a lot of Indian reservations, if you were a Native American living on an Indian reservation, you could get ballots. It wasn't guaranteed, but you could vote if you were so dishonest under your Indian name, your English or Anglo name, and your married name if you were a woman. So you'd have the opportunity to vote three times, three different people. Federal laws, they're iffy at best when it comes to applying on Indian reservations. So you could easily get away with that. Well, we've seen reports out of California where women are getting ballots mailed to them, their married name, and their maiden name. Again, twice. Now, it's technically a felony to avail yourself of this opportunity and vote twice. But do you think anybody in California is going to prosecute you? Do you really think anybody in California is going to prosecute that at all? No. And, well, they couldn't because so many ballots have been stolen from mailboxes because when they come, it's like the publisher's clearinghouse sweepstakes day when they used to mail that out. Now they just do it all online. Or the vow pack. The day that you get a vow pack, everybody in your neighborhood gets a vow pack. So if you are at the ready, if you are chomping at the bit to get out there and get your hands on some empty absentee ballots that are mailed to everybody, you just have to know when they've been mailed, which would be pretty easy. The state informs people, all right, we're mailing out ballots now. And then you have to be at the ready, and the day, the second that your ballot shows up, or if you're really enterprising and highly paid political operative, you know where in your neighborhood the mailman starts, right? You go to where the mailman starts, 7 o'clock, 6, 8 o'clock in the morning, or you pay the mailman to give you a heads up that today's the day. And then you can follow the mailman and pull ballots from mailboxes of people who are either getting ready to go to work, have gone to work, or whatever, aren't there. You've probably got a nice little window, a rather large window, to follow the mailman and pull all the ballots. You fill them out, send them in, nobody's the wiser. The problem is, and that brings us to this KTLA story, the problem is a lot of those people then go to vote. Those people say, I'm going to vote. I want to vote. I am going to vote in person. It is my civic duty, blah, blah, blah. And I despise Gavin Newsom so much that I am going to go. I want to double make sure that my vote counts. I want to get there and do it. That's where KTLA picks up. They report, some San Fernando Valley voters think they are being wrongly prevented from casting a ballot in the upcoming gubernatorial recall election. At El Camino Real Charter High School in Woodland Hills, some voters say they were told the computers showed them as having voted, even though they had not. Huh. West Hills resident Estelle Bender, 88, says she was far from the only person who was being told incorrectly that they had already voted. In addition to friends of hers who experienced the same issue, two other women outside the polling place, Bender said that inside, quote, a man next to me was arguing the same thing. Bender said she filled out a provisional ballot and left really angry. Now, provisional ballot is a waste of time if you're told that you've already voted. Why? Because they will only count a provisional ballot if you can clear up the situation with the other ballot that you voted. You will not be able to clear up that situation. That ballot will likely never be located, the other ballot, the mystery ballot. So the provisional ballot, while you feel good, like, well, at least I was able to get... No, it won't. Provisional ballots are largely for people who need photo IDs, and they forgot their photo ID. And so they go, I need to... Run. Let me fill out a provisional ballot while I'm here, and I'll come back. I'll go to the office of the registrar or whatever tomorrow and show my ID. And then you can make my provisional ballot a legitimate ballot. You can do that. Happens all the time. But if somebody's already cast a ballot, if you're already marked as having been voted, what has to happen is for your provisional ballot to count. They have to track down what is alleged to be your other ballot, right? This can be done provided they have not separated your ballot from the envelope. If they have opened your ballot envelope and separated it so it's ready to be counted on election day, you'll never know which ballot it was. There's no identifying marks on it whatsoever to indicate that it was from which envelope or from which person. So in many ways, it's the perfect crime. That means that no matter whether or not you did vote, if you didn't vote, and I assume that these people did not vote, and they can protest to high heaven, they can swear on a stack of Bibles, they can do anything and everything in their power to convince people that they did not vote, their provisional ballot will not be counted. Their provisional ballot will not be counted because they are marked as already having voted. Nobody gets to vote twice, unless you're a Democrat. These people, by the way, in this story from KTLA, just so happened to be Republicans, which I'm sure is a coincidence in a state completely and totally 100% run by Democrats. I'm sure it's just one of those fluky things that you just don't know. You know, accidents happen, things like that. So as you watch California, you watch the returns out in California, the polling data suggests that Gavin Newsom is not going to be recalled. The Democratic Party has spent millions, they've raised over $100 million to fight the recall, has spent millions trying to terrify white suburban women that a black man is coming to take their rights away. That's how it works. That's how Gavin Newsom works. Larry Elder grew up a man of modest means and went on to become an American success story. Gavin Newsom grew up the son of the chief counsel of Getty Oil, fabulously wealthy, never had to worry about money a day in his life. So he did what is the domain of rich kids. He decided to go into politics and play God in the state of California. He spent more time on his hair than I suspect on his education. And what's funny is Gavin Newsom kind of tries to tell you that he grew up poor. He grew up with a single mom. Kind of a damn joke, to be honest with you. Yes, his parents did get divorced. But the idea that he grew up in a single mom household is absurd. His dad was the chief lawyer for Getty Oil. His dad was paying child support. The divorce alimony was involved. Gavin Newsom grew up a rich kid, and he's attacking a black man as a threat to white suburban women. And we'll find out tomorrow whether or not it works. It probably will. It works with liberals all the time. Changing it up just a little bit, I subjected myself, you know, as the host of this program, we have to occasionally, you know, the word hero is thrown around pretty cavalierly these days, but rarely is it so appropriately applied what it'd be to me and how I'm about to do it. They played the MTV Video Music Awards last night, and I watched a solid 20 minutes of it, I think. I think I made it about 20 minutes into it. But I watched it, and it opened up with this thing where Madonna's voice-ish, I couldn't tell if it was a computer or what, it was riding in a cab, recounting her story of coming to New York with nothing but a couple of bucks in her pocket and blah, blah, blah. And then I looked at the screen. I said, was that computer generated? Is that like de-aging? What did they do? And then they introduced Madonna. So it was all sort of animated anyway. Then they introduced Madonna at the wherever the Brooklyn Nets play, whatever that place is called. And out comes Madonna in an overcoat and a black leather hat, because why not? And all she does, she's there for on camera for like 30 seconds. Just says, we grew up together, blah, blah, blah. And then she whips off her coat and she's wearing some sort of, she looks like she should be in the Village People, is what she, like the cop, the gay cop in the Village People is what she kind of looks like. Except without the assless chaps, she's just got some sort of like leather apron bustier thing on. Walks off and there's nothing but her bare butt walking out. She's like 63 years old. And she is so desperate to be relevant. And actually, if you think about it, as I saw some highlights too. But if you think about it, Madonna is perhaps more relevant today than she ever was, because every female that was on that screen, every woman, real or imagined, that was on that stage last night performing that I saw, except for one, Olivia Rodrigo. She performed in like a normal dress that you'd probably, you know, be proud to have your daughter wear. She was like the second performer. But every other one of them was like a stripper. Literally like a stripper. I instinctively reached for my coin, my singles in my pocket. I didn't have any. I was like, oh my God, I need to hit the ATM. And then I realized, no, I'm at home watching TV. So glad my children were not watching this crap. But I was just watching it and thinking, I love the message coming out of the leftists in the entertainment industry. What is it? We've got women. They're super powerful. They're super strong. They don't have to do. They do whatever they want. They can. They are the future. Women are the blah, 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 blah. All these pro-women things. And at the end of the day, these very same leftists essentially throw dollar bills at these women and girls and go, come on, shake your ass. Let's see what you got. Shake your moneymaker. Let's do this thing. Come on, let's do this. All these people who insist, women are so strong and so empowered and so this, that, and the other thing. And we're not just sex objects. And then they're sex objects. And then what are we told? No. She's not being a sex object. She's empowering herself. Really? That's empowering? Okay, like, I don't care. I just don't see how on earth that's empowering. Because I would think if you could sing, you would, and you were proud of what you were singing. You liked what you were singing. You were glad that you were, you know, like, I want people to respect what I do. I would think if that's what you did, then you would probably not want to do something that would distract from that thing. Right? Just saying. You wouldn't want... It's forget the dancing like a stripper. It's not just that. You wouldn't have, you know, 12 people around you dancing like strippers. You wouldn't have the giant electric light show. It's not your world tour. It's a one-off performance at an awards show. You would think, I am going to go and show the world how well I can do this craft that I do. And I'm going to go out there, maybe go acoustic instead of the lip-syncing stuff or the auto-tuning. But no, it's all the auto-tuning. It's all the overdubbing. It's the clearly the band is not playing this music. Clearly you might be singing along with an audio track, but you're not really doing it because I don't care how much cardio you've done. If you are in the midst of singing and carrying a long note, you cannot carry a long note and, you know, pelvic thrust the stage in a push-up position at a record rate for 3 minutes simultaneously and not have it impact your ability to sing. I'm just saying, doesn't matter. I don't care how much cardio you did. You're not going to be able to just shrug that one off. So Madonna was out there looking at basically an industry that is made up of her children. God knows she's got enough potential baby daddies that they could all be her children and never even know it. But this is what we've become. Now, that being said, I'm not uptight. But Olivia Rodrigo, I thought that she, I didn't, her song was, I don't care for any of the music. I don't really like music all that much. But her song was more upbeat than all the other stuff. There was no grinding. It was, you know, a song about, I guess she's like 18 years old. So it's a song about being 18 years old and liking somebody, I think, if I remember correctly. The other stuff was about sex. The thing, again, I'm going to sound all get off my lawny on this, but I'm not all get off my lawny on this. It's just one of those things where you're sitting there, and if it's too on the nose, it's bad. That's... It's stupid and shows a lack of ability. Yeah, if you listen to the music and the songs back in the 50s and the 60s and, you know, the Buddy Hollies and the Little Richards and the Chuck Berrys and you're like, and the Elvises, and you're thinking, this song could be about sex. It could be about sex. And it could also be about a hound dog. It could be about all kinds of things. It could be anything. Tutti Frutti. Who knows? Keep a knocking, but you can't come in. All of this stuff, it was more creative because it wasn't just out in the open and in your face. Now it's all just straight up in your face. Now it's just pathetic. Here it is. Come and get it. Do this. Do that. Do the other thing. And you sit there and you're going, God, this is, I mean, even if you were a libidinous 16-year-old, you'd be sitting there going, all right, well, this is a bit much. Madonna, first of all, put some clothes on, trying to eat here. Secondly, is there no mystery left? Again, I know I sound like the old man, but is there no mystery left? Songs are about, hey, baby, come over here and slide on this and do on that and do the other. And you're just like, ugh. You don't have any creativity. No creativity whatsoever. And then you say, well, it's so very empowering for women. And that's what made me think of this. Well, and there was a fight between two idiots on the red carpet. I forget which idiots. It's hard to keep track of which idiots there. Conor McGregor and somebody else fought, like, over who was dumbest, I imagine. I don't even know that MTV plays music videos anymore. But in this idea that this is all super empowering to women and, oh, my God, we're empowering women, there's this story out of the New York Post. Again, not a woman. I don't see how this is empowering, just like I don't see how it's empowering to skimp down to some dental floss and some pasties and go, wow, she's such a talented whatever the hell she's supposed to be doing. But this story, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, she's an actress. She does a show on one of the streaming services that called Fleabag. I've never seen, I don't think I know anybody who's ever actually seen it, but it was won awards because... whatever, because it probably stars a woman. Phoebe Waller-Bridge may replace Harrison Ford as lead in Indiana Jones, colon, report. You're sitting there going, what in the hell? What? Phoebe Waller-Bridge may flip the script on Indiana Jones. The English actress, 37, could be replacing Harrison Ford as the lead in the fifth installment of the Indiana Jones franchise, which is set to hit theaters next summer, according to the Daily Mail. Well, then it's not an Indiana Jones movie. Either Indiana Jones is the star of the movie, Harrison Ford, or it's he plays a crotchety old professor who makes a cameo in a movie. Sources told the outlet that producer Kathleen Kennedy, who helped ruin Star Wars, was making big changes, which could include replacing the lead character with a woman. Quote, it would be a huge statement and a great role for Phoebe, one insider told the Mail. It was announced earlier this year that the Fleabag star had been cast opposite 79-year-old Ford in the film, the name of which has not yet been revealed. Iconic franchise starred Harrison Ford, blah, blah, blah. It's not clear who Waller-Bridge's will portray in the upcoming movie, but a source told the Mail the gossip on the set is that the character will slot into the leading role. Well, then it's not a Harrison Ford movie. Then it's not an Indiana Jones movie. And again, this comes up every time you hear like there's going to be a new James Bond. So the new James Bond movie's coming out next month, and that's it for Daniel Craig, allegedly. We'll see. If they make enough money off this one, I suppose they could open up the bank big enough to get it to him in there. But when they announce, whenever there's a new James Bond on the way or speculation about a new James Bond, what do you see? What do you hear? You hear, well, maybe they need a woman. Maybe they need a female James Bond. Maybe that'd be so empowering, a female James Bond. If I'm a woman, I'm going to look at that and I'm going to go, that's very condescending. You can't, no one can create anything new. We're just going to take something old and in some sort of weird fit of rage against the patriarchy, we're going to seize it and go, no, this is ours. Yes, we claim it for us. You're not claiming jack for yourself. You have no original thought. There's nothing good about getting hand-me-downs. It's very condescending. It says you're not worth being creative about. Just shut up and take the job. Same thing goes for with race too. They always say, well, maybe there should be a black James Bond. Look, James Bond is James Bond. If you want a black spy, make it good. I'll be all in on it. Just make it good. Instead, they go, well, why don't we just take what already exists and change it? You got the Wonder Years coming out. And I don't remember when the Wonder Years was originally set. I thought it was the 70s, but it might have started in the 60s. But Fred Savage is producing it, and Don Cheadle is doing the voiceover. And it is the same show, but it's with a black kid instead of, like, okay, well, why do you have to name it the same thing? Why do you have to basically, can't you come up with a new idea? Is Hollywood that devoid of ideas? Is that what diversity is? Well, let's just all pretend. We'll just take we're going to do Happy Days, but we're going to do it all with Hispanics. We're going to set it in Southern California, and then we're going to call it Happy Days, and it's going to be La Fonzie, and he's going to come out, and it's going to be awesome, and he's going to ride a lowrider instead of a motorcycle, and we'll just embrace all this stuff. Is that what we are as a society? Is that how pathetic we've become? Is that how pathetic our creative community has become? Let's just take what exists and we'll go with it and do it again. Now imagine all of this garbage and all of this sort of reimagining. Imagine the absolute fecal storm that would happen if they took a Sanford and Son or a Good Times, or a Cosby Show. Well, Cosby Show is probably a bad example. But a Cosby Show type of show, different world, and you made it with an all-white people cast. And, well, you know, we're just going to try and redo this. You can do 90210 with all Hispanic cast, and we're going to take this one, and we're going to make it an all-white cast and everything. And you go, they would absolutely freak out. They would absolutely go berserk. They shut down a movie. They stopped a movie from being made because Scarlett Johansson was going to play a trans woman. Scarlett Johansson was going to be playing. She's not really trans. Like, yeah, she's also not really a Russian, you know, super assassin either. Calm the hell down. Relax. But it's not. It's okay one way. It's not okay the other way. It's stupid. It's all stupid. How about you just be creative? I realize that's your job and everything, and nobody likes to do their job. But come up with something new. Your own life or whatever. The problem is, they now have these requirements that if they're going to be made, it's got to have this number of this many people and this number of this type of person. To get a TV show greenlit, it's got to be looking like this, and you got to have that and the other thing. And, oh my goodness, we need to see all the way down to the dolly grip what a full 23andMe DNA print out of all of their ancestry so we can find out whether or not we can produce this program. And you're sitting there and you're going, somewhere along the line, we forgot something, I think. Oh, yeah. Is it any good? And the answer is no, more often than not. It's not any good. That's the real problem. The entertainment industry is not entertaining anymore. They're preachy. We got a day for preachy. It's called Sunday. We got a time for escape, and that's supposed to be the entertainment industry, and you're not allowed to do that anymore because it's probably a hate crime. We're so screwed going forward. Let's talk about taxes and Democrats' tax plan for a few minutes, shall we? Because they're coming for your money whether you like it or not. They've already got it spent, so it's not like you can do much of anything about that. And you're going to already get hammered with the inflation that they are creating. But they want a double dip. They want a double bite. They want more and more of your money. And they are insatiable. You cannot plug a black hole. And that's what they are when it comes to spending. Americans for Tax Reform, my former employer, they have a post up now. Dems proposed $3 trillion tax hike on working families and small businesses. It includes this interesting opening, shall we say? So House Democrats are proposing almost $3 trillion in tax increases, including tax increases on small businesses and working families. I thought they would never do that. My goodness, I didn't think Democrats would do that. It said nobody ever. They have to come to the middle class. They have to. There aren't enough rich people. This is the largest tax increase since 1968 compared to the size of the economy and the largest tax increase ever in nominal dollars. Some of those tax increases include, and this is where it gets interesting, raising taxes on working families by increasing the federal corporate income tax rate from 21% to 26.5%. This tax increase will be passed along to working families in the form of higher prices. Hello, inflation. That's how it works. No corporation actually pays taxes. They pass the savings on to you, and they pass the costs on to you. Also, hire fewer people. That'll be fewer jobs and lower wages. This will give the U.S. a combined state and federal rate of 30.9%. Higher than our foreign competitors, including China, which has a 25% corporate tax rate. And Europe, socialist Europe, communist China, 25%, socialist Europe, has an average rate of 21.7%. According to the OECD, the developed world, the Western world, has an average corporate income tax rate of 23.5%. The Democrats want to make that 26.5% here. And then when you add in the states that have their various plans and they're all going to try and raise it, all the Democrat-controlled ones, you're looking at over 30%. Why would any business stay in the United States of America? They wouldn't. Before Donald Trump lowered the corporate rate, they were leaving. They were fleeing the United States of America. Under Donald Trump, many of them came back. It's not that difficult to call the movers again, especially when you want to jack it up that much. It is insane. Democrats view all money as their money, and they allow you to keep some of it occasionally if you behave in a way that they approve of. You add to that this, at least, you know, they're screwing themselves over the most, I guess. I mean, that's very little consolation, if any, but it's a consolation to a certain extent, I suppose. This story from CNBC. Top earners in New York City could face a combined city, state, and federal income tax rate of 61.2%, according to plans being proposed by Democrats in the House of Representatives. The government gets more than you do. The government gets a lot more than you do. Not even 50-50 or 51-49. It is 61.2 for them and whatever's left over to you. And oh, by the way, if you die, the government wants a cut of that too. The plans being proposed include a 3% surtax on taxpayers earning more than $5 million a year. The plan also calls for raising the top marginal income tax rate to 39.6% from the current 37%. The plan reverses the 3.8% net investment income tax and extends it to certain pass-through companies. The result is a top marginal federal income tax rate of 46.4%. Isn't that lovely? Doesn't that sound great? In New York City, the combined top marginal state and city rate is 14.8%. That's over and above your federal burden. Who the hell, what do you get out of New York City? Oh, you know, I love the smell of fresh urine on hot concrete in the morning. And you just can't get that anywhere but New York City. You can see why there has been a massive exodus from the city of New York. The House plan is still a proposal and could change, yet the combined rates for New York City would be among the highest in nearly 40 years. Yeah, let's go back. I always say, well, Republicans want to go back to the good old days. America was never great. America was always racist, and Democrats are trying to basically rebuild the Jim Crow era. They want the tax rates of the Jim Crow era. They want the segregation of the Jim Crow era. They're pushing all this stuff. It's weird how that works, isn't it? Top earners in California would face a combined marginal rate of 59.7%, while those in New Jersey would face a combined rate of 57.2%. Hawaii could face a combined rate of 57.4%. There is a man. Now, these are all liberal states, and you sit there and you go, well, that's what you vote for. That's what you get. And I understand that mentality, but there comes a point where even the damage being done starts to have ripple effects. The people who don't flee, these states, and many of these liberals will not flee these states, largely because, particularly in New York, the real estate market is so iffy at best that if you put down a huge amount of money on an apartment in New York, you're probably not going to get that back. You might have to really take a massive loss. So you probably can't leave. You'll have to stay. So what will that mean if you are a business owner or thinking about starting a new business or opening a new business or expanding an existing business? You now have less money with which to do that. So you won't do it. That means fewer jobs. That means fewer revenues to the state and city through sales taxes, through their income taxes, which you just pass on to customers. But sales tax, you literally do pass on to customers. It's right there on the receipt. It means all sorts of things. New York is already, you sit there and if you watch, I watch the, what's it called? Million Dollar Listing New York and Million Dollar Listing Los Angeles. And they're selling multi-million dollar beautiful houses. Houses you can only dream of even visiting, being invited to a party to, let alone living in them. And they're selling. And they're trying to say, of course they're trying to polish the thing. They went, oh, COVID, things are coming back. Things are going well. We're making these sales. We're doing this, that, and the other thing. To a very few number of people who look at this as a massive opportunity. If you've got hundreds of millions of dollars laying around and you think that the real estate market is going to come booming back in the next 5 years and you got the time and you don't need that $100 million to be liquid anytime soon, you can snatch up some great things at a great bargain. So I'm not sure how you'd take a $80 million house is a bargain, but you could buy that. And if you think it's going to be worth $100 million in 5 years, you will make out. If you are a normal human being looking to buy a house in California, forget it. You're not going to be able to afford it. If you're a normal human being looking to live in New York City, forget it. You're not going to be able to afford it. Yes, this impacts the highest earners directly with these numbers. But the thing is, it's all on a sliding scale. So you go down, maybe you're not making $5 million a year. Maybe you're making a lot less than that. That's still hitting you. It's not hitting you at the exact same rate, but it is hitting you. And if somebody's making $10 million a year and the government's taking 60%, you've still got $4 million. Now, you should have a lot more than that, but if you're a Democrat, you vote for this, that's on you. I couldn't care less what the government's taking from you. But somebody making $50,000 a year whose effective tax rate is 25% or 20%, we'll just say 20% for the sake of argument, that's $10,000 out of that. That $10,000 leaves you with $40,000. You can't live, you can barely live on $50,000 in New York. You will have a tougher time living on $40,000 in New York. And that's not to mention the state, the sales taxes, the everything you buy has a surtax attached to it. Everything you buy in New York, if you've ever been to New York, things are way more expensive. Back when I used to smoke, I guess it's been, what year is it? 6 years ago since I quit smoking. I'd go to New York occasionally, and cigarettes, pack of cigarettes, was like $10. $10 to $12, depending on where you got it. People who smoke generally don't do it because they think, well, this is the key to health and long life. They do it because they're addicted to it. So you're hammering them. That is a regressive tax. You will find that even if the rich people smoke, they can afford it a heck of a lot easier than the poor people who smoke. Same with taxes on alcohol. Same with taxes on certain types of food. If you say you can no longer use this type of carryout container for your carryout menus because it's bad for the environment, well, how often do you think the sons of millionaires and billionaires are ordering from the TGI Fridays down on the corner that's going to have to add some money to the cost of their carryout because they have to buy the expensive brand of takeout things? Probably not many. And those kids of the wealthy likely are going out to eat or, you know, cooking at home or having somebody cook for them at home. And even if they were paying for it, it's regressive. It's a percentage of the income, the percentage of the money that these people have. It matters a hell of a lot more to the people with less than it does to the people with more. You can say, oh, we're going to tax the rich, and you can be outraged, and I am outraged over these percentages, but they're also going to tax the poor. That's who they're really ultimately going to screw over. They'll make them more government dependent. And sadly, far too many of these people will go, well, we need to elect Democrats to fix this problem that Democrats created. Don't think too hard about it. It'll give you a headache. One thing you learn about the left and watching the leftists as they live and as they try to govern is they do not like this country. They do not like capitalism. They do not like liberty. They do not like individuality. They make sure they're exempt from all of these things, but they really do despise the things that we love about this country. And you end up in a situation that if you go to the National Archives now, and this is embarrassing for this country. But it's what the Biden administration does. It's what you can say, well, it's the Biden administration. It's actually any Democrat administration. Any Democrat now, if they expect to win, has to appeal to these radical, fascistic, radical leftists that a few years ago maybe could have been stood up to. But now it's probably too late. There has to be some sort of real catastrophe electorally for Democrats to push back against these mutants. But you go to the National Archives and say, oh, I want to look up the Declaration of Independence. And they can find it. You go right there. I'm looking at the page right now. There's the actual copy of the parchment, the Declaration of Independence. It looks like hell when they restored it a few years ago. I think they made it worse. But in any event, there it is. And you sit there and you go, wait a second, right up at the top of the page, just above the Declaration of Independence, there's something that says harmful language alert. See the National Archives statement on potentially harmful language. You go, what? Wait, what? And you realize at that moment that Democrats, the Biden administration, have placed a trigger warning on the Declaration of Independence. A trigger warning, for those of you who are sane and not soft-skulled liberals, is a warning that says there could be some mean language in here that will make you uncomfortable. Be careful. Don't read this without reading this trigger warning first, because if you, you know, there's mean stuff in here, there's bad language. And you go, what in the hell is this? As an American, this is our founding documents. It's on the Constitution. It's on everything at the National Archives. It says the statement on potentially harmful content. The catalog and web pages of the National Archives and Records Administration, the NARA, provides access to many millions of descriptions and digital copies of the permanent record of the United States federal government. The catalog and web pages contain some content that may be harmful or difficult to viewers. Then don't read it. Then, you know, seriously, we need to remove all sharp objects from your house. If words are going to hurt you, you're a threat to yourself and to all of humanity. We should put you on an island. The NARA's records span the history of the United States, and it is our charge to preserve and make available these historical records. As a result, some of the materials presented here may reflect outdated biases, offensive, and possibly violent views and opinions. In addition, some of the materials may relate to violent or graphic events and are preserved for their historical significance. Again, you're sitting there and you're going, you're the archives. Who needs this warning? If you're this dumb that you need this warning, you got no business reading the founding documents of this country. Okay, can we just go right there? You should just renounce your citizenship and move to Canada. I propose a plan that people who need trigger warnings on anything can renounce their citizenship, and we will then pay for them, taxpayers. Forget the debt. Even with all the debt, we will pay for them to move to the country of their choice. They will have 3 weeks in which to get their act together, but they must completely and irrevocably revoke, renounce their citizenship in the United States first, and then we will spare no expense to move them out of this country for eternity, unable to even come back. I mean, because why would you want to come back and visit? What would be the point of coming back and why would you come back and visit a horribly racist country? Continues, the National Archives is committed to working with staff, communities, and peer institutions to assess and update descriptions that are harmful and to establish standards and policies to prevent future harmful language in self-generated descriptions. Again, leave the damn country. Do us a favor. Do yourself a favor. If you need trigger warnings, leave the country, because you're going to do harm to yourself and or the country, and we're not interested in that, so get the hell out. Mean that in the nicest possible way. In addition to what I've read you already from the National Archives website, archives.gov, by the way, they have frequently asked questions. In case you're so soft-skulled of a leftist that you just don't know, you're offended and you're ready to be offended, but you're not sure why you're offended or what you should be offended by. You're there. I'm here to be offended. What am I supposed to be looking for to be offended by? This is what our government warns you about. If you're reading the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, any speeches, any notations, the National Archives contains pretty much everything that happened in this country on paper. You know, handwritten speeches by presidents, by diplomats, pieces of legislation, so on and so forth, individual notations, all that stuff. Frequently asked questions. What harmful or difficult content may be found in the National Archives catalog and our web pages? Now, nothing should be the only answer. Nothing. Nothing. This stuff was written before your great-great-great-grandparents existed. So, and probably before your family ever set foot on this continent. So the idea that you would be offended by anything here is more a reflection on your character flaw than anything else. Maybe your parents didn't love you enough. I don't know, but nothing. That would be my answer, but I'm not the federal government. They write, Some items may, reflect racist, sexist, ableist, misogynistic, misogynior, and xenophobic opinions and attitudes. Be discriminatory towards or exclude diverse views on sexuality, gender, religion, and more. Include graphic content of historical events such as violent death, medical procedures, crime, wars, terrorist acts, natural disasters, and more. And demonstrate bias and exclusion in institutional collecting and digitization policies. I don't understand what the hell that last one is about, but the rest of it, everything else about it, if you can't handle it, don't visit the National Archives, all right? You are the problem in this country, and I mean that in the nicest possible way, which is in no way at all, because it's not possible for me to be nice about this. It is insane. Oh, my goodness, there might be some... Basically, you're saying you're going to... There are documents in here dating the entirety of this founding of this country that do not reflect and were not written in today's Twitter-approved vernacular. There are things that are written here that would not pass today's muster, that would get somebody canceled from impolite society by leftist mobs. That's what the sum total of the trigger warning is. That's it. People thought differently and held different opinions. And we're allowed to hold different opinions long before today, where we don't allow that anymore. And therefore, until we find a way to get popular support behind stripping all of these documents from existence, burning them, both physical copies and digitally, we have to warn you that there might be something that could make you cry, that would give you the feels. And if that's the case, we have a safe room with puppies and Play-Doh around the corner, and go over there until you feel safe. It's pathetic. It doesn't say that, but it might as well. Next. Why does the National Archives make potentially harmful content available? If this is a frequently asked question, our state of our education is much worse than I'd ever thought, and it's time for a violent revolution. I mean that, again, in the nicest possible way. Say the National Archives' mission is to preserve and provide access to the permanent records of the federal government. Working in conjunction with diverse communities, we will seek to balance the preservation of history with sensitivity to how these materials are presented and perceived by users. Okay, this to me, again, I'm just a humble white guy, seems wildly condescending to me. Don't worry, there's some stuff in here that would be offensive to some black people. Not most black people, but then again, Democrats don't give a damn about most black people. They only care about black liberals. And those black liberals that we have worked in conjunction with to monetize their offense, they're going to come in here and get offended by some things. They're going to tell us what we can and can't show. They're going to tell us and expose us to which parts of our history we're allowed to recognize. And from there on out, we will make sure that everybody is okay with this. Now, we have people who are professionals to be offended on behalf of you. It's to me telling me that black people couldn't possibly read something that is about 150. It really is. It's the Democrat Protection Act is what it is. Because all the offensive stuff, Democrats. Slavery, Democrats. Jim Crow, Democrats. Segregation, Democrats. So, no, we got to bring in some black Democrats. We'll get Al Sharpton down here one weekend. We'll go through everything and we'll make sure that we wipe clean all of the stuff that makes Democrats look bad. We'll twist it to make it seem like it was Republicans who did it. And then we'll just go on about our business. Again, if you don't like it, if you can't handle the truth, first of all, why are you researching history? Secondly, renounce your citizenship and leave the country. Do the world a favor. How is this material described, and why are some of the terms used in the descriptions harmful? They aren't, you soft-skulled, spineless loser. They are words. Words do not hurt you. But instead, our government writes, activists choose what language to use when describing materials. Some of these descriptions were written many years ago using language that was acceptable at the time. Activists or archivists also use language provided by creators or former owners of the material. They can provide important context, but can also reflect biases or prejudices. Oh no. Oh no. Archivists often use standard sets of terms, such as the Library of Congress subject headings, to describe materials. Some of these terms are outdated, offensive, or insensitive. Oh no, it's insensitive. How does shut the bleep up sound? Is that, where's that rate in the insensitive category? In the past, National Archives has not had standards or policies to help archivists avoid harmful language. Yeah, because in the past, we used to not be ruled by a bunch of fascistic, thin-skinned, lunatic leftists. But now, our federal government is controlled by these Nazis. And finally, they say, how are the archivists working to address this problem and help users better understand such context? It shouldn't be necessary. Honestly, it takes a special type of stupid, like a seriously just suffered a severe closed head injury type of stupid, to look at this and go, well, I don't get this. Why won't you change everything because I'm offended by this? We must, in the future, do better. No. No, they said examples of what they're doing include informing users about the presence of and origin of harmful content, which doesn't exist. Revising descriptions and standardized sets of descriptive terms, supplementing description with more respectful terms, or creating new standardized terms to describe materials. We're going to dumb it down. We must cater to the dumbest and thinnest skin among us. That's it. Researching the problem, listening to users, experimenting with solutions, and sharing our findings with each other. Listening to users. Hey, I don't like the way this is presented. Well, it's a fact-based, it's the document. It's not even an interpretation of the document. I don't care. Can we get rid of that Emancipation Proclamation? Some of the words used in there, I find wildly offensive. My gender studies professor says I'm entitled to this. Evaluating existing processes for exclusionary practices or institutional bias that prioritize one culture and or group over another. American culture. Now we've gone from a melting pot to a series of chafing dishes, and it is going to be the destruction of this country by design if it's allowed to go forward. And finally, making an institutional commitment to diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility. It's a building that houses all the documents of this country. If you want to see a document, you have to register as a researcher. You can find everything online, but if you actually want to see a physical copy of it, you have to register as a researcher. It's not the easiest thing in the world, but it's not the hardest thing in the world. You have to have a justification to, say, see the original copy of the Emancipation Proclamation or the Gettysburg Address or something like that. And then you can see it. You can do it. As an American citizen, you're already well on your way to being qualified. That's the first and foremost qualification. But accessibility, inclusion, it doesn't matter who wrote it. If it's there and it's been donated to the federal government, if it was Martin Luther King's speeches, I think they have some of them there. The rest of them, I think the family tries to sell because they want to make money off of the memory of it. Fine, it's their dad. But if somebody else owns these documents, they can choose to sell them to the federal government, to museums, to rich people, whatever. But the idea that the person retrieving you a document, if they don't look like you, that somehow you'll be alienated from your home country, and somehow this violates diversity, equity, and inclusion, or accessibility, is insane. It is part of what is fundamentally wrong with the left and what they're infecting and infesting on this country and making things significantly worse as they try to destroy it. It needs to be destroyed in and of itself. This happens whenever you elect Democrats, wherever you elect Democrats. You can scratch your head. You can be disgusted by it. But if you voted for Joe Biden, or you know anybody who did vote for Joe Biden, this is what they wanted. We told you it was coming. We weren't kidding. This is just the beginning. We weren't kidding about this. We aren't kidding about the rest of it. Scary stuff if it isn't stopped. I want to talk about vaccine mandates before we run out of time, because I want to play a clip from last week. Peter Ducey is the only person who works in the White House press corps that actually bothers to ask any serious questions. Now, for about 20 minutes during the Afghan crisis, the media sort of stepped up and started saying, wait a second, you're lying to us, and pulling on the garbage and calling out the garbage, the lies of the Biden administration. But that moment has passed. I knew it was going to pass. I told you it would pass. It wouldn't take very long to pass. Passed really quickly. We have people who are still trapped in Afghanistan, and they don't give a damn about it. So they're not really being asked about that. Even Peter Ducey's really not asking all that much about it. But Peter Ducey was asked after Joe Biden gave his big speech about, well, you've got to, if you want to keep your job, I love this. We got to keep your, we need an economic recovery. And then Joe Biden says, but I'm going to get you fired if you don't comply with what I tell you to do. Peter Ducey asked, why is it that Americans have this mandate for them? This thing, must get the jab or else your employer will be fined or you'll lose government contracts or, you know, all sorts of bad consequences. Why is it Americans have to face this? But illegal aliens streaming across the southern border don't have any similar requirements. It's just come on in, the water's fine. It's supposed to be remain in Mexico, put back in place. They're not really adhering to that either. They're still streaming across the southern border. And there's no attempt to, if they refuse the vaccine, there's no consequence for it. It's okay, you can stay here until your appeal if you get the vaccine. If they say no, then you're, you know, catapulted back into Mexico. No, there is no requirement for the illegal aliens compared to Americans. And Peter Ducey asked Jen Psaki, Ginger Goebbels, about this. And the exchange is about 50 seconds long. He asks the question and she kind of dodges the answer. And then he asks the question again. And you're going to hear her just absolutely dismiss the concept. If you're going to whine and complain that the unvaccinated are part of the problem in this country, then why have you invited in a million unvaccinated people across the southern border? Probably another million on the way this year. Couldn't that maybe be these little Johnny Appleseeds of disease maybe be part of the reason that there is a problem in some of these states? Of course, the federal government won't tell you where they're relocating these illegal aliens to. And maybe they're shipping them to Florida. Maybe they're sending them to Alabama. Maybe they're sending them to red states so that they can say, look, these red state governors are making things much worse. I don't know that to be true. But honestly, I wouldn't put that past this crew in the White House. So listen to Ginger Goebbels, Jen Psaki, and Peter Ducey discuss this and pay particular attention to the crescendos right at the end, where she just says, meh, next question.
And then why is it that you're trying to require anybody with a job or anybody who goes to school to get the COVID-19 vaccine, but you are not requiring that of migrants that continue walking across the southern border into the country?
Well, look, our objective is to get as many people vaccinated across the country as humanly possible. And so the president's announcement yesterday was an effort to empower businesses, to give businesses the tools to protect their workforces. That's exactly what we did. But certainly we want everybody to get vaccinated, and more people are vaccinated, whether they are migrants or whether they are workers, protects more people in the United States.
But it's a requirement for people at a business with more than 100 people, and it's not a requirement for migrants at the southern border. Why?
That's correct. Go ahead.
That's correct. That's not what you said. That's correct. Oh, okay. Screw Americans. Look, we care more about the rights of the illegal aliens than we do about the safety of Americans. Now, we'll shut down a business. We will damage people. We will destroy them personally if they displease us in any way, shape, or form. But in general, we don't really give a damn about Americans. Let's just be honest. Can't we just be honest for once? I don't know. Can you be honest? You don't seem capable of being honest. You're not really an honest broker. Not really an honest person. But this is the mentality of the left. This is who they are. They don't care about you. Yet they'll run saying, oh, those Republicans, they're really mean and they're out to get you and they're going to do mean things. Meanwhile, you've got our idiot vice president. Well, there are idiot presidents out there all the time. And I've got some audio of him rambling about Trump on 9/11. And like, what are you doing, dude? This is why they didn't allow him to give a speech. But before we get to that audio, I want to read you what Kamala Harris, our idiot vice president, tweeted out on Sunday. Quote, by vaccinating the unvaccinated, which would be who you'd vaccinate, right? I mean, by vaccinating the unvaccinated, increasing our testing and masking and protecting the vaccinated, we can end this pandemic. That's exactly what we are committed to doing. And you can almost hear her cackling as she in that horrible, horrible laugh. But she didn't write this. Her staff wrote this. What is it? By vaccinating the unvaccinated. Okay, but that's who you'd vaccinate, right? You don't need to vaccinate the vaccinated. Increasing our testing and masking. What do you need testing and masking for if people are getting vaccinated? And then protecting the vaccinated. So you have to vaccinate the unvaccinated to protect the vaccinated. Does that make any sense? Does that make any sense at all? If you're vaccinated, and vaccines work, if they work, are not the vaccinated already protected? Isn't that the ultimate in protection? Didn't you get vaccinated so you didn't have to worry about testing? So you didn't have to worry about masking? All of that stuff? If this is a pandemic of the unvaccinated, as Joe Biden senilely rambled the other day, then why are any of these decisions impacting the vaccinated? That would be my question. Now, to hear these leftists argue it, it is we need to keep masks because the vaccinated can still get it, but won't have any symptoms for it. Won't know they had it, but could still spread it to the unvaccinated. Okay. But again, if the unvaccinated are not vaccinated, at this point, you're unvaccinated by choice. There comes a certain point in the process where it's no longer, I just haven't been able to find the time in the past 9 months. That doesn't really become a valid excuse. So you're that way by choice. Why then should everyone else have to alter their existence? And why then should the federal government step in and place demands and curtail the rights of everybody else because people are making a choice not to be a certain way? Or is it that the vaccines don't work? I think the vaccines don't work. I think they are immune boosters. Nothing wrong with it. Just don't call them. Vaccine is a vaccine. Right? Talk about it as an immune booster. Seems to work pretty well as an immune booster. It means, you know, that the people who have the shot are not ending up in the hospital, not ending up dead. The vast majority, if not all of the people who end up dead are unvaccinated or unshotted, whatever, unboosted. And that's fine. Call it that. It's not a vaccine. But still, it is stupid to say that you need to protect the vaccinated. That's, if it's a vaccine, they don't need any protection. Problem solved. Things are done. But it's just not that way. It's insane. Now, I want to play really quickly this Biden rambling about Trump before we do a quick Australian update with that's along these lines of we got to take your rights and everything. But Joe Biden on Saturday in New York, I think it was. It doesn't really matter where it was. It was inappropriate. It was at a 9/11 memorial. He went to all three, spoke at none. And you can begin to see why he didn't speak at any, because somebody stuck a camera in his face and asked him about Donald Trump. And this is what came out of his pie hole.
This idea that, you know, what do you want to do with Biden? I want to box him. I should be so lucky. You know what I mean? But this, the kinds of things, or, you know, stuff that is coming out of Florida, stuff that's coming out of, you know, Robert E. Lee had been in Afghanistan, you're the one. No. Anyway, I'm telling you too much.
What the hell is he talking about? The hell is he rambling? Now you can sit there and say, why would the president go to these events and not say anything? That's why the president went to these events and didn't say anything. Because when he says something, he says stuff like that. I think we're going to start seeing less and less of Joe Biden. I think his handlers are recognizing that there's no bottom for him to hit. He's just going to keep getting worse, and he's going to slowly disappear a la Woodrow Wilson for the last part of his presidency. And maybe that'll be better. Who knows? Now, I want to quickly give you an update of what's going on down under in Australia. This is the New South Wales Premier, Gladys Berejiklian. You know, I'm not even going to be able to pronounce that name. Berejiklian. Talking about their goal on there is getting the vaccinated rate up to 80%. At which point, they say, they promise, they pinky swear, to let people be free again. Except now they're changing the terms again. They're a lot like negotiating with Darth Vader. And the terms are being changed now that if you're not vaccinated, though, if you're part of the 20%, when they get to that 80% who aren't vaccinated, you ain't getting your rights back. Get used to that idea now.
The government has not yet confirmed what will occur at 80% double dose vaccination. We're still working on those plans. I don't want people to think they can sit back, let everybody else do the hard work, and then turn up when it's 80% and get everything else that vaccinated people are. That is not the right message. I want to say very clearly that if you're not vaccinated, you will not have the freedom or the freedoms that vaccinated people have, even when we get to 80% double dose.
You will not be free. We will not set you free. The vaccine shall set you free. Now, who knew that individual liberty was contingent upon whether or not you would take a shot? I didn't know that. I guarantee you the Australian people didn't know that as they sat back and ceded some of that liberty to their government. And now, only now, they're being told, you ain't getting that liberty back because you have displeased us. And whatever displeases us must be destroyed. It's terrifying. And that's what the leftist mindset is in this country, too. There's not much of a difference aside from an accent between what you hear there and what you heard from Joe Biden and what you hear on a daily basis from Ginger Goebbels. Time is up for today, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate you listening. Thanks for spreading the word and all that. We'll be back here tomorrow. Fear not. It's just one of those days where you're sitting there and you're going, there's so much going on, and it seems like there shouldn't be anything going on. But if you look beyond the headlines, if you look beyond the yawns, you see that they're taking advantage of a situation that they helped create and make worse. Not by accident, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back here tomorrow. Like I said, thank you for listening. Have a great one.
But it's a requirement for people at a business with more than 100 people, and it's not a requirement for migrants at the southern border. Why?
That's correct. Go ahead.